Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
This is a Crowd podcast.
Welcome back to the French Rugby Podcast with me, Tim Groves, ex-Scotland international and adopted Frenchman, Johnny Beattie, and former France hooker, Benjamin Kayser. Are we still calling you a full-on Frenchman this week, Benji, after last week's citizenship test?
So after last week's embarrassment, I had a thought about it, and I realized that Johnny was a little bit cheeky because he didn't surf the wave of basically getting through my answers, but it's self-inflicted. And listen, it puts me back in my place, huh? Even as a Frenchman, I need to open a book from time to time and actually learn stuff about my country, so it's not an issue. But to add to that, we'll speak about it in a minute, but at the weekend, I was at the England-France women's game, and I'm the only Frenchman who managed to massively sunburn my whole forehead in the English sun, being 2 hours out there. So I am definitely becoming British. So I can hide it and pretend as much as I want, but now it's time for me to face the facts.
Maybe we should do an English citizenship test next week, and you'll ace that.
Don't push it, mate.
Johnny, how's things in the south of France?
Mate, good. I actually thought I was sunburnt until I saw Benji, so I feel great. I was at the beach Saturday and Sunday. It was 25, 26 degrees. It was magic. Burgers and beers on the beach. It was a good weekend. No rugby. For me, looking forward to getting to Toulouse this weekend. So we pitched side for that one, which would be great for the semi-final. But look now, kids are back at school. A bit of time to breathe again, a bit of space to ourselves, which is great. Just stuck with a little one at home. But no, great weekend.
Lovely. And you mentioned it, Benji. You were at the Stoop. So France lost to England in the final of the Women's Six Nations. So how was it?
So listen, I'm not the type of guy who will prone diversity for the sake of it. But for all those who were lucky enough either to be there or to watch the game, the sun was out. It was live on BBC. It was live on the equivalent of BBC France 2 in France. The quality of rugby wasn't outstanding, but it was really heartwarming to see genuinely the top level of world women's rugby going flat out at it. Anybody who doubts on the impact and physicality of women's rugby, go and actually sit on go and walk on the side of a pitch. They properly went at it. It was a brilliant game of rugby. Again, not so much the fireworks and attack that everybody was hoping for, but long story short, fantastic day of rugby. Women's were put on the highest place, and for a reason. The reason being, they are genuinely heartwarmingly attached to all the values that we love about rugby. Give everything about what's you know in your belly for the jersey. Commit 1,000% and the right balance between physicality and technique. And for that, it was a superb day.
And you mentioned it there, Benji, on terrestrial TV in both England and France. And there's quite a lot of chat about that in England because it doesn't happen very often. But in France, it's big, isn't it? Big crowds sometimes when we had crowds and decent audiences on TV as well for women's rugby in France.
So I don't know how it went on the BBC, but I got the audience from France. 1.1 million people watched it. The top 14 final, don't correct me if I'm wrong, Johnny, but we'll be like 1.5 million on Canal Plus, on the equivalent of BT. So, you know, behind the paywall. They will be delighted if a big Sunday night game will do 750,000 on Canal Plus. So 1.1 million people is outstanding. They're absolutely delighted with it. It was a proper exposition, but they're trying to make a big thing out of it. The reason being, rugby needs to develop as a whole. It needs to change. It needs to be more diverse, more welcoming. And so there's something big around it. I know France are putting a lot of attention through it. I was lucky enough to be in Clermont for the last England-France game. I think there was 16,000 people, 15,000 people in the stands. It was a beautiful spectacle. And it just brings something different. But England, unfortunately, and I hate to admit it, are by a mile the best team in the world at the moment. And it's funny because at the end of the game, so I was speaking to Maggie Alfonsi and to all the sort of the English superstars of that area, of that arena, they cannot wait for France to beat England. And the reason being is that they don't cheer for France because they want women's rugby to take that other step. And to take that other step, you need more teams to show that they've improved and they're getting better. You could feel it was more than rugby. It was about development, about... just reaching out. They, I think the girls who played today will know that will know that at the end of the game, maybe in 5 years' time, there's somebody going to be like, oh, I watched that game, you know, and that day it made me want to start rugby. And that's a pretty cool thing to do. I don't think I've inspired a lot of people to play rugby, let's face it. And I think these women definitely did.
Yeah, and I think 600,000 watched on BBC over here, and that compares to about 200,000 for a Premiership semi-final on BT. So there we go. Good to have a wide audience for it.
Absolutely.
We will look ahead to the French-dominated Champions Cup semi-finals shortly, but there's been some big news at your old club, hasn't there, Benji? So I think we talked about it a few weeks ago, but Jono Gibbs is moving from La Rochelle and taking over as Clermont boss next season, isn't he? So good decision.
I think it's a fantastic decision if he doesn't come on his own. Next week, we'll have Damien Chouli, my former mate from Clermont. So we can go deeper into the qualities, into the ins and outs of why Jono Gibbs, for me personally and for Damien Chouli, we've got the same opinion. It's going to be such a good input. But my general idea is that he's going to need to be able to build his own staff around him to actually build the next 10 years of Clermont. And I really do feel, maybe I'm wrong, but I feel that that's the general idea of what's going on at the moment. And if that's the case, it's going to be dynamite. The professionalism of the setup, the fanatism from the fans, the structure of the academy, the general pride of belonging from the whole region, which is something that will take you a decade to build, right? They've got that. That's already there. Plus the talent of Jono and his players, all that combined can make fireworks.
So when you say, Benji, bring a team with them, like obviously Ron Nogara stepped up. He's now taking the La Rochelle job, which is huge for him as well. Who would you like to see jump across with him?
So it's not so much come across. So basically, you remember what we were talking about in the last couple of weeks? Franck Azema was head coach after being backs coach, and he was head coach with Jono, but they were almost a duo, right? In the day-to-day basis, everybody knew Jono officially was Ford's coach, but everybody knew Franck was very, very open about it. It was a clear duo putting the strategy up together. So we don't know if he's going to be a manager, because he doesn't only want to be manager. You know, he adores lineouts and forwards play in general. Yeah. He loves defense. He's a proper strategic guru. So is he going to do the attack with Sadourny? Who's going to stay with him? That's my question. So I don't know how it's going to be. I think Xavier Sadourny is going to stay. It's pretty much been said already by the president. I think Benson Stanley is a very, very young coach, but he's doing some fantastic work. And I just think he will learn so much also. And they had a good relationship, him and Jono. So I wouldn't be surprised if Benson stepped up and became proper defense coach with a bit more things to do. I would just love to see Dato Zirakashvili, the Georgian prop, come back, who was already a scrummaging consultant for La Rochelle. Jono took him there. If he could come, but then that means Didier Bess. It would be natural if he only went with Franck, if Franck does end up signing in Montpellier and everything gets done, because Didier Bess is from there. Those are the little changes, but I'm talking, are you also going to replace sort of the link between the president and Jono? I think somebody needs to be there. I would have loved to do that job, but that's not going to be me.
Benjamin Kayser, get your hat in the ring, mate.
Nah. I had some chats and stuff, but straight off the bat, I told them, listen, it's not even worth talking. Agents will always call you and say, oh, you know, I've heard that this. And I stop you right there. If I'm packing my bags up in September to go back where I just moved to from 2 years ago, whereas the whole idea was to move the girls to an English school and, you know, and Oxford, and to take a next step to go back to there, it just makes no sense. I would love to, but it's way too early, way too soon, just not the right timing for me. But somebody desperately needs to do. The same way that we spoke to Yannick Nyonga, remember, a couple of weeks ago, months ago? And he's doing a fantastic job of being linked with the modernity of rugby. And he's also got that player eye and the respect from the players and above. So I think Clermont needs a guy like that.
So what do you think it is that's attracted him about moving back? He's already had huge success. Look where La Rochelle are. They haven't won anything yet. But what for him do you reckon made the difference between jumping ship from La Rochelle and heading back to Clermont?
He left in excellent terms, always feeling there's so much more. My job is not done at Clermont. I wish it could have done more. So we played a couple of Champions Cup finals together, two. He took us to two Champions Cup finals that we lost, but we won the Brennus together. And he left by saying he's gutted. His kids don't want to leave, but it was a professional decision to try to fit more with the criteria that are required for a career in coaching back in NZ. I think he's just so happy in Europe that now he feels that because the opportunity is there, he might as well take it. It would be fun to ask Jono. I mean, I can call him and stuff. I'm still in contact with him. I'm pretty sure it's Franck Azema who gave him a call. And you'd be like, mate, if there's one guy that needs to take after me, I want it to be you. So basically, unfinished business. But he knows that on his own, he's not going to do enough. He knows that Clermont is la belle endormie. How would you describe that, Johnny?
Sleeping giant.
Sleeping giant, exactly. It's a sleeping giant. So there's so much potential there, but a potential to be Leinster, right? We're going to kill everyone for 10 years if you want, but not to be up and down like that because the structures are there. All the hard graft is done. And like you said, there's going to be some change. So they're not going to lose Parra or Lopez. They're still there next year. But who do you build around and how do you do that transition and how do you get that next leadership group in there? That's going to be a tough one. And that's why he can't do that and take care of the ethics and take care of the strategy and take care of the forwards role, right? You need to spread the workload.
You heard it here first. Benjamin Kayser turned down the top job at Clermont with Jono Gibbs. But one day,
not enough money.
Let's have a look at the Champions Cup semi-finals then. And we're all on duty, aren't we, for Toulouse-Bordeaux on Channel 4. So is it definitely going to happen? Because there have been positive COVID cases in the Bordeaux camp, haven't there?
It's going to be the last minute. They're going to have to leave the decision fairly late. Bordeaux are going to, I think they've got two more tests to do this week, Benji. And with those two rounds, that dictates who they can choose. They haven't been able to prepare. So they've all been training in small groups. They didn't get to play at the weekend. So the preparation has been wrecked. Christophe Urios normally would have had, if you'd missed the game, you'd been beating the crap out of each other in 15 on 15, trying to get some contact and people used to collisions. They haven't. It doesn't get any easier. Going to Toulouse on any normal weekend is hard, but it's made much, much harder this weekend. I don't know if you've had any other inside information, Benji, but like, for me, that's it. They've got two more rounds of testing, and from those tests, they're dictated to with what team they can put out. If they've got contact cases, their hands are tied, and those groups of people that are training isolation are removed from the 23.
Yeah, listen, it's the reality. I don't know if you guys saw. So obviously, well, we'll speak about it later. But Johan Nuge has a career-ending injury, and Max Médard was talking about it. And then you're like, how do you throw yourself into the Bordeaux game next Saturday? Is that, well, first there's COVID tests. And that's the number one thing that all the teams have to go through before you even speak about the game and the strategy and the fitness levels and blah, blah, blah. They all need to get tested. And then we will know if the game is on. So I think every team, it's become second, you know, the normality of having to assess that. And on top of that, when you're Bordeaux, where you had a tiny bit of an epidemia and you have to deal with it, that's why they're saying there's a possibility that the game doesn't see it through. But at the moment, all the green lights are there, but it's so uncertain that when you had an epidemic, look what happened with the French team the last time during Six Nations. You can have 2 days with absolutely zero cases, and the third day, somehow, somewhere, there's another guy that comes back up. So, unfortunately, we're just going to have, it's going to be one that we need to wait. I think testing's been done yesterday. Everybody's negative, but it needs to be confirmed tomorrow.
Yeah.
And if no positive cases come out tomorrow, then the game should be played all good. But obviously, the preparation will be completely all over the shop, because I don't even think Bordeaux are allowed to train as a full squad yet.
No.
First training will be Thursday or Friday, which is definitely not ideal.
Well, we'll all keep our fingers crossed that the game does go ahead at the weekend, and we can have a chat about it now and bring in a man who should be able to give us a bit of insight into it. Former Toulouse prop Census Johnson joins us. How are you?
Hello, Fajin. It's good.
You spent 8 seasons at Toulouse, so are you backing them to win a fifth European crown this season?
Yeah, with the games that I've seen over the last couple of weeks, I definitely think they have the goods to get that fifth star. They've got quality all over the park, and I just don't see them losing, to be honest.
So you talk about quality. I'm just going to jump right in there to my man crush, Julien Marchand.
I wonder how long it'd take.
Hey, I think he's flipping awesome. And I think he's just getting better and better and better. But forget about him. Let's just talk about genuinely that front row with Cyril Bay, who's at the moment dominating, as Alou said. Julien Marchand, yep, who's spot on, and Charlie Faamuina, who just seems to be absolutely rock solid. So obviously you can speak to us about that. And that's always been the key base. I mean, when you were in Toulouse, mate, there was probably what? There was William Servat next to you, Tighthead, Stinkamp, Lucid. There was always this Dan Newman or whatever. There was always this culture of having a massive, massive party. That's how it all started. Can you see that history repeating with the new generation?
Yeah, and you know, you have a look at the headlines of late. You see DuPont, you hear about Intermac and those sorts of players, which do make a difference. But I actually think that the key to this Toulouse is their front row. It's been the unsung heroes. Charlie, Marchand and Bay, they've just been awesome. With the games that I've seen, they've been the real key.
And it's interesting to hear you talk about the forwards, because you mentioned everyone talks about Dupont, Entermac. We had Zach Holmes on the other week talking about the Toulouse way. Give us an insight from a forwards point of view, what it's like at Toulouse, having spent 8 seasons there, the culture of the club, and also the pressure to play a certain way. So how does that translate into from a forwards point of view?
Yeah, so over the my years anyway, it was difficult because at that stage, every team was a difficult team to play. You had Brive, who obviously weren't the top of the crop, but then every time you came against them, it was pretty much a shit fight. And they were always up for those games. So there were never really any easy games at Toulouse, because everyone just wanted your head.
It's different, obviously. I was never part of Toulouse, so I can't really comment. All I know is, when you're a 17-year-old and you start getting picked for the French team, you want to go play for Toulouse because they have the coolest kit, and because it's a good. But you joke, but those black shorts with that sponsored little Nike thing. When we were 16, mate, you'd beat the shit out of people in the bus just to get those shorts. When you played all through youth rugby, they were the team to beat. When I started rugby, basically they won, I think, from 91 to 95, 4 consecutive Brennus. It's never been done. And then in 96, they won the Champions Cup, the Heineken Cup at the time. They were absolutely killing it. Then Stade Français came to the scene, but they were still there. So Biarritz came and go, and Toulouse were always there. So they had that bit of a three, four-year sort of tough moment where the generations changed, the Guinoves needed to swap and all that. But there's definitely a myth about Toulouse, which I hated at the time because I've never been part of them. But you have to admit that there was a bit of jealousy. Obviously, there is a Toulouse way that they cherish, that only Sensors knows better than me, and that made them successful. Which, like he exactly said, they have found back again.
They have that aura about them now. It's come back. It was lost over the last 3 or 4 years, apart from last year when they won. But they're definitely the team everybody wants to beat now. And it's hard to keep up their reputation for years on end, because it's just the thing. When you play for Toulouse, you just put your head down and you fucking try to beat everybody. It's a special place to live in too, especially when you're winning. But also, I found out the last few years of Toulouse and seeing where it ended up with the end of the cycle, it was also a hard place to be at as well, with the supporters being down and then also the boys being down at the same time. We were really in the trenches the last couple of years.
Comes with huge pressure. Even for a young Scottish kid growing up watching Heineken Cup rugby, Toulouse was the team you wanted to play for. So it doesn't matter if you're a 17-year-old on a team bus or a pasty white kid running around age 13 watching TV. It's the exact same. Everybody wanted to be part of Toulouse. Like you touched on the heavy part on the end, which happens everywhere. The end of cycles, it gets nitty-gritty, it gets hard. But more positively, reading through the notes before this, 2010 was the last time that they won the Champions Cup and you were part of it. That must have been an epic memory. Can you talk us through what that was like winning it? You talked about how incredible it can be with Toulouse behind you as a town. Like, the celebrations must have been phenomenal.
That European Cup sticks with me the most because it was my first year at Toulouse as well. And then being able to come through the airport and just seeing the whole place packed out all the way out to the Capitole, and it becomes addictive. You want to win every single time just to get that sort of atmosphere again. And as the years wore on, it started getting harder and harder because everyone they really want to put it back on the Toulouse team of the moment. And we found it pretty hard near the end to try and keep that up. And although for me, as one of the old guys back then, and having to leave such a place, it was difficult. It wasn't an easy thing to do. But I think for me and also my career, it was the best time to leave and try new things.
Just while we're on Toulouse and celebration centers, I just want to ask you about one guy who crops up so regularly on the podcast and you'll know him well. I think you know already. Joe Tacori.
Yeah.
He is talked about as the glue that holds this Toulouse team together off the field as well as on it, just in terms of his relationships with people. But more importantly, is he the best drinker you've ever seen?
Yeah, hands down. Joe's the champ of champs with drinking. I don't think I've met anybody that could beat him. The funny thing about Joe is he came into the Toulouse culture at the time with Guy, where Guy didn't like to have anybody drinking and playing music on the bus, especially after losses. And I remember Joe's first year coming into the team, and we had lost, I can't remember the team at the time, we had lost the game, and Joe stood up and was like, well, what's going on? You know, is it a friend or why is no one drinking? And then I had to explain to Joe, you know, when you drink, when you lose here, there's no drinking. And that's the policy. Do not smile. Do not try and talk. That was Guy's way. And especially during pre-match and that sort of thing, I've got a story. We were in Oyonnax preparing to play, and me and Joe have come in for breakfast, and we've just started laughing, talking about the toilets there, because, you know, the toilet space is made for hobbits, and we couldn't get our legs to sit straight into the toilet, and we're just laughing. And then we didn't see Guy come behind us, and he was like, oh, why are you guys laughing? And we're like, oh, nothing, just a personal joke. So then later on in the day, you definitely don't want to be the pre-match speech. So Guy's gone on with a speech, and he's made me and Joe the culprits of that speech. And he's like, yeah, well, you know, Oyonnax are trying to survive in the competition, and we've got guys laughing on the day of the game. And, you know, and then he calls me and Joe up, and we're just like, what the hell? So, yeah, we've become the post-match speech, and it wasn't funny at the time, but it's funny when you talk about it now. And those were a couple of my moments with Joe coming into the team and having to teach him a few of Guy's traits.
Mate, I think that happens to every foreigner in France. It's so serious. I'm not like Benji, you have grown up with like super quiet change. Everywhere I've been in France is like super serious. Whereas like generally coming from Scotland or people coming from elsewhere, you can kind of have a laugh on the bus. And then when you get to the stadium, you switch on. Whereas in France, it seems to be the opposite. You can kind of have a laugh at training during the week, but as soon as it's game day, if you crack a smile, you're getting clipped around the ears. The strangest contrast. And cut, mate, we've all been there. I think we've all been the butt of a head coach in France's, what are you doing? What are you thinking? Why are you smiling? It happens to everybody.
Yeah, I'm not too sure if Benji got one of those with Guy, but that's one of the worst things to happen to you.
Mate, I'll tell you what, there's I was brought up Stade Français. So Stade Français was completely different. Music in the changing room, rock up an hour and 15 before the games. I think Toulouse, when you guys played at home, didn't you go to the hotel the night before?
Yeah, no, every week, weekend, we played any games, whether it was hard or difficult, we were in hotels the night before. So it was real heavy. It was real heavy. And it was something, and it was something that I really need to get used to, because I was never home on the weekends to see the family. And it's hard, especially for the wives, because they're like, what are you going to the hotel for? And we're like, you know, when you're at Toulouse, you're here to play rugby. There's nothing else. So you get told, like, there's millions of people that want to play for this team. And if you don't want to play for this team, they're just going to replace you straight away.
That's what happens when you're the Manchester United of rugby, mate. It's the myth, and the myth comes with a heavy burden.
What's the thinking behind that? Either Benji or Sensus or Johnny, like, what? Why?
They don't want you thinking about anything else. Just sit there and you think about the game. And, you know, it was something I wasn't used to. But then after a few months, that was it. You just thought about rugby. The most difficult times, if I remember correctly, was heading into like semis and quarters in that of the Heineken Cup. Like, you'd get insulted from the start of the week. So, I mean, it wouldn't be a bad intention, but it would be always just to get you up for the weekend. And there's so many stories and that, because I don't want to portray Guy as a bad person, but I loved him. I loved the way he worked, and I loved the system that he had, and it worked for me. But if you were anybody else that came from outside and had just gone through it, you'd think he was mental.
that feeds to everyone. So I never had Guinoves apart from 1 week, the French Babas, where he put Byron Kelleher as captain of the French Babas, who rocked up late the first team play meeting. Mate, Guinoves, I'm telling you, at the French Babas, gave the most serious speech that they've ever seen before. French Babas is literally, listen, drink piss all week, have fun, freedom, this and that. And Jean-Pierre Rive had to go behind Guinoves and be like, chill out, mate. Come on, it's the Babas. It's the Babas. We're here to have fun, you know? And Guinoves did not like that.
Yeah. And it's one of the reasons why you're so successful. But I, having spoken to a lot of the boys who are in the younger generation now, and him transferring over to the French team, it worked for our generation.
Yeah.
Like our generation, we were used to getting abused, insulted all the time, and it worked for us, you know. It sunk in like, okay, well, I'm going to prove them wrong. Whereas if you were to do that now to a kid now,
you break them,
mate. How many times, Sensens, would you take in the showers before a game and, you know, shaking up, or you see guys headbutting each other, whatever, in Biarritz? I'm pretty sure like Jérôme Thion must have been the machine, must have been pretty fun before games. Now that's just a different era. It almost looks like a different game. You try to do that to the new generation, Damien Penaud will probably run away and not even want to play that game. You know, you'll be like, oh, stay away from me.
Yeah, even being in the changing rooms and having a few discussions with the younger boys now, and you think, you know, these guys would never handle the things that we had to go through in our generation. From Monday, as soon as you walked into training, you're getting it like, oh yeah, did you see Racing's game from the weekend? Did you see their front row? I called them and I told them not to stick their finger up your ass this weekend. And that was a Monday. So you can imagine during the next 4 or 5 days what you're getting their whole time. And yeah, that's kind of the things we had to put up with.
It's old school. Like, even now, do you remember when Bujala was president of Toulon and Savea wasn't playing that well, but like they weren't playing well inside him. He's like, oh shit, I think I signed like his useless brother. This isn't Savea that's rocked up. This is some, useless cousin. Like, just clear insults in national prep. It's the same in clubs. And it's that, the one thing I find massively different was, like, I find Monday there were sort of insults to maybe Thursday, but as soon as it was team run day and game day, it was serious. You had to be super serious. Whereas if you do a team run with like the Scottish side, or like when you were at Saracens, it was much more lighthearted. And then there was a kind of a switch that you would flick when it was time to go to game. Whereas I find in France, it's like there's a seriousness of the pre-match routine, team run day, and then game time. And like the two biggest examples for me were Brice Mack, I'm not sure if you played with Brice Mack, the hooker from
Cast.
Who played for the French team as well, like really good friend of mine. He did not leave his house after Thursday at midday. You couldn't get him to come out of the house. It was incredible. But that was how he lived. He was like, no, there's a game on Saturday. Like, I can't. You're like, mate, we're going to go for coffee. We're going to go for dinner with the wives. He's like, mate, it's Thursday. You know my routine. Like, would not leave the house. The other one on game day was Urios. So when I had Urios as coach at Cast, I came down, like, it was a day game. We're playing in La Rochelle. And Richie Gray and I came down. We had breakfast at 9 o'clock. And it was like, you know, typical French breakfast. There was like cereal, baguette. We were like, shit, well, there's nothing else to eat, but like, want to get like a decent meal because the game's at 1 o'clock. We ordered scrambled eggs. He came down, saw we were having scrambled eggs, and ordered off the menu, threw our scrambled eggs off the wall. Like, just absolutely raging that we changed the script, or like didn't want to go a lot. Like, we were trying to do something different, but we were just trying to get like a decent meal before the game. Like, completely different, but little nuances that you get like in the UK or Southern Hemisphere to France, completely different. But I love it. It's great.
You wouldn't get it anywhere else.
That's why we love it.
That's probably one of the impact of also the Kiwis, and you know that, Census. All the Southern Hemisphere guys, look, you talk about Joe. Joe will keep a smile on his face before 10 minutes to the game. And he's had good games and bad games. I don't think there's many games where he wasn't ready to fight, right? Mm. Right. And that's I mean, I played a year with Chris Massoi. Chris Massoi is the most chilled bloke you've ever seen before a game. He'll laugh and he'll joke and he'll this and that. And let me tell you, on the pitch, he's not there to laugh. He's not there to joke. He just wants to chop people in half. And to be honest, when you can allow yourself not to use all that energy for 6 hours banging your head in the shower wall, you know, to get ready for a game, then you have a lot more energy. Yeah, since Thursday, then you know, jump on the high kick the postman because he tried to touch your mailbox on a Thursday night. then at least you have a lot more energy for the 80 minutes on the pitch.
You're talking about the differences in generation, obviously on the pitch as well, since it's such a long career, the role of a front rower has changed massively from the start of your career to the end.
Yeah, it has. For me coming into Europe and that sort of thing, where I was born with touching the ball, that's always what I wanted to do. So when I came into Beirut, they didn't really see any front rowers touching the ball. It was just scrums, mauls, and doing the hard stuff. And I think for me at the time, it was difficult coming into that system. But then when they saw me run on the ball, they allowed me to do my thing. And I think over the years it's evolved into that. But I think the last 5 years have been real about stats, being able to get off the ground and get back into the game. And it's one of the reasons why I decided to give it the cut last year, because I couldn't keep up with the stats.
I don't believe you couldn't keep up what they're asking you for and buy on.
Yeah, it was hard in the end. Like I was doing pretty much every single training and it was difficult. I'm not gonna lie, but I'm kind of happy where I'm at now.
And you mentioned buy on, Johnny. You've got a bone to pick with Sensors, haven't you? About buy on,
I'm not sure if I even brought this up with you, Sense. So like we got the up from Pro D2, we got promoted, and I got a phone call from the president of buy on. He was like, "Oh, just to let you know, your contract's going to Sensors Johnson. He's decided to sign for Nick 100%.
Is that a like for like swap, Johnny? It's you and Sensors?
Yeah, pretty much.
Because I play number 8.
But that was it. That was how I finished.
Thanks for feeding my family.
But you signed for 2 years and you did 1A.
Yeah. So
it wasn't even work. I could have just stayed and played tight head.
I signed on to do a second year as a coach, but I think in the end, I just wanted to spend a bit of time away from the game and put a lot of time into my family, because they'd sacrificed so many years. And my girls are getting to the point where my first one's going to go into high school. And I just want to be able to be with her and not being told I needed to be in a place at a certain time. And it was just getting that freedom to be able to do what I wanted to do. And it's such a different life. I have had difficult days where I've gotten bored and that, but mainly when it's rained for like 2-3 weeks straight. But apart from that, it's good to see life outside the game though as well.
Mate, it's awesome. And I think generally you can split players into two brackets. Those that want to play as long as they can forever and basically get kicked out. And I think others kind of get bored mentally, want different kinds of stimulation and are ready to kick on. So, mate, it's credit to you that you've taken the decision in your own hands and you've kicked on, you're doing other things. I want to ask you briefly, I'm not sure if the other two boys follow you on Instagram, but give us a little insight into what you've been up to over the past couple of weeks, because I've been watching and it looks awesome. But in and around the Pay Basque, what have you been up to?
So I met a guy who owns a Pimong farm out in Espelet. I don't know if he's heard of Pimong the Espelet.
World famous chilies.
Famous chilies. So he's needed a couple of people to help him on his farm. And I kind of put up my hand to help him out. Like I was out last weekend driving and planting Pimongs and that sort of thing. But it's refreshing. Learning new things and being able to do things that you wouldn't have otherwise experienced playing rugby. And it's those small things that keep you going every day. And a lot of my other things I've been doing is just a few little side projects, but it's been pretty good so far.
Mate, I wanted to ask you, you touched briefly about your interest outside rugby. You've also running a company, Front Row Supplies, clothing company. How's it been going?
Yeah, good. I run it with my brother-in-law, who's based in New Zealand. So it kind of started about 5 years ago when I was in Toulouse, but didn't really put that much work into it until the last year with COVID and that sort of thing. And since then, it's gone real well. And we're trying to work a bit on it to try and get it to work a bit more in Europe. The only thing is with everything closed down, it's pretty difficult. But yeah, we're pretty happy with where it's at the moment. Hopefully we'll be able to do a bit more work over here when things start opening up.
And do you deliver to Kent Census? Because I think I know a front row is might be interested.
A front row influencer.
Yeah, man.
I've seen pictures of the guys that he's using. They're triple my size at the moment. So I will be a small influencer. But no, the kit looks amazing. I think it's done like a proper hardcore, proper fellas, right? It's like you want to be the cool, badass dude? Well, you wear that. That's the way that I see it.
Cheers, man. Thanks for the plug.
So you're clearly loving life in France still, even though you're not playing any more Census. And we made Johnny and Benji take a mock French citizenship test last week on the show. So is that something you've been through? Can you give us an insight into what that's like? Are you a French citizen or not?
Not yet. I'm in the process of doing it, but I did do the test about a year ago. So out in Paris, I went to Alliance Francaise and tried it out and didn't do any study, but looked at it on my phone real quick and surprisingly enough, I passed. So.
Oh, mate, yeah. That's a kick in the nuts, that one.
Yeah, you've got Benji in your back pocket. French.
Mate, I think it's brutal.
Yeah, I surprised myself, but I had another friend, a Georgian friend, I'm not going to name him. We both went out at the same time. But if you listen to his French, it's perfect French. So he's got it to the test, aced the whole test, but they've given him a piece of paper and he's looked at it and he's like, je comprends rien de tout.
Kakovin, if you're listening to us, if you're listening to us, say hello, mate.
He doesn't play rugby.
Whatever. A Georgian who's in France who doesn't play tight end prop, mate, that's bullshit.
A Georgian who doesn't play in the front row.
Yeah, whatever.
Great to see you still loving life in France, Census. Brilliant to have you on and get your insight. And if you can pass that citizenship test, I think Benji will agree. You're a proper Frenchman.
Cheers. I think I'm more French than him.
100%, I agree.
Brilliant, Census. Thanks for coming on.
Cheers mate. Cheers, mate. Thanks. Take care.
See ya.
Hello, I'm Geraint Thomas.
And I'm Tom Fordyce.
And this is your official invite to come and join our brand new cycling club.
Now, good news, it's a podcast too. So you can come and listen to us, try and build this club from scratch. And we'll have a few familiar faces joining us for the ride too. Right, G, time to tell everyone what we've called this club.
Well, we thought long and hard about this. So we came up with a strong, original name that really stands out. The Geraint Thomas Cycling Club.
Yeah, I suppose it's easy to remember at least, isn't it? We will have new episodes for you every single Tuesday.
Come and join us.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, we mentioned it there with Sensus. Toulouse, Bordeaux this weekend. What do you reckon?
I think on a normal day, normal circumstances, it was always going to be Toulouse. So with Bordeaux having even less preparation and a tougher time and Toulouse being on fire, I mean, they put 30 points on Racing at the weekend. They already come out of the Munster confrontation. The Toulouse, they backed it up in Clermont under the rain, under complicated circumstances. I think the only cloud in the sky is probably Johan Huger's injury, who's going to be career-ending because I think he ruptured his Achilles and he got operated on and he already announced that he was going to retire at the end of the year. But it's one of those emotional moments that will only spike up even more the group's motivation to do him proud and to do well. But they seem to be slightly light in the back three department because Max Médard, I'm sure he'll play, but is apparently not super certain of starting. So that's the only thing. Basically, Toulouse are a better side. And with the fact, especially in Europe and especially at the moment, Bordeaux have already peaked, like we said. I mean, it's a fantastic Champions Cup, irrespectively of what happens this Saturday. So I think it's always going to go Toulouse's way. And on top of that, if Bordeaux haven't played for 2 weeks, it's a complicated one, haven't even been able to smash the shit out of each other 15-on-15, you know, for a couple of days. It is very complicated. So I think it's too much of a task to ask for Toulouse, for Bordeaux, sorry.
I agree. The danger is that we write them off completely, which is what has happened to all Christophe Urios' teams. Like, think about Montpellier getting cast in the final a couple of years ago. Nobody even thought for a second the cast could win. And you're right, Toulouse have got way more experience, way more quality. They're playing better rugby. But I certainly want it to be a game. I would definitely back Toulouse as well. But they're not going to have any preparation, like you said. They're not going to be able to train. It's whether Christophe Urios, with his words, can conjure something out of them that gets them within a score and they can sneak something. Otherwise, it could be very one way. That's it. We don't know what kind of team they're going to get on the pitch. But if you think about how you would try and stop Toulouse, you'd hope for a wet day. You'd think, right, everything that Christophe prides himself on, pragmatism, huge aggressive defense, field position territory, is the only sort of team that I would see, a few teams in the top four team that could pip them, and would be Bordeaux, the way they play. So look, they weren't flashy. They didn't do anything fantastic apart from the work of Jalibert, who was insane in the quarterfinal. But look, if you manage to stop, like, his whole game is built on two man tackles, huge defense, physically impose yourselves, and play for your town. And look, they will not be prepared, but crazier things have happened. So look, I'm hoping for a huge game. All French semi-final doesn't happen that often. It should be a terrific game of rugby. But look, it's going to be really, really hard for Bordeaux. Obviously, Toulouse are clearly favourites.
And after the All French quarterfinals, are we going to get a try in this one?
I think you're definitely.
And Johnny, you mentioned it there. You've got experience with Christophe Urios. So just give us, if the game does go ahead, just give us an idea of what techniques he uses to get his players up for a game like this. Backs against the wall, everything's against us.
Yeah, he's really good at just getting inside the heads of the players, the motivations and culture of the group, and twining that with the So Oyonnax, he did that really easily, and brought people together, a nothing town, small population, but they fought. Like, going to Oyonnax was horrible, not only because they had a horrible field and it was one of the worst places to go in top 14.
And the toilets were pretty bad.
But he made them this tough to play against, gritty, like you described, like a Brive or a horrible team to play against, because they were physically imposing. They dominated collisions. They were in your face. They were up for it. And they would never give up. And that's exactly what he cast as well. You know, small town buying the mentality. Where are you from? What does it mean? Bordeaux have been a bit lost. They've had huge budgets that the president's chucked money at the club for years. But this is now the first time that they've looked settled, organized, comfortable in themselves. and they really fight. And it'll be the exact same. Look, we're going to Toulouse, the Pretty Boys, multiple winners. We've got nothing to lose. We'll do this for Tanner Bordeaux. We've gone through absolute hell. He is really good at getting you in that mindset of being underdogs, not letting up for a second in a game, defending properly, being organized for 80 minutes. I mean, it's really simple rugby the way they play, but it's effective. And that's what he brings to the table. So look, it's knockout rugby. Anything can happen, but he will definitely mentally have them primed, even though it will have been a difficult 2 weeks to digest. He'll have them primed to absolutely leave this field with nothing and to lose and give it all.
And you mentioned Johan Huge, Benji, a hugely sad end, if it is the end, as we assume, we kind of know it is, after his injury against Racing. I'm reluctant to mention this now, but he does have a reputation over here because of his edge in the UK. Being in France, obviously, he's got a legendary reputation for what he's done, what he's achieved in his career. Is that reputation that some people in England pen him with as a dirty player, or is that unfair?
I'm not particularly close to him, but I think it's unfair. I think he's a bit like your Mike Brown. If you want to hate him as much as you want on the pitch, he still gives absolutely everything. He's not dirty in the sense that he's not a cheap shotter. Maybe he's a little bit on the edge, and Mike Brown is the epitome of what French don't like about their English arrogance, and then vice versa. Maybe, you know, you need to find your French in France now, mate. You can only respect the fact that he's got, what, 50 odd caps for France. He's won some titles fair and square. He actually went through second division early on, and he's a little bit of a late bloomer. He was in Agen, then went to Bayonne, and then made it the French team, and then Toulouse. So everybody thinks super high talent career, but actually until the age of 25, 26, he didn't do much with himself. And then World Cup 2015, I was with him in England. He was by a mile the fittest back we had. He just went through, he took professionalism to a whole different stratosphere. And then he broke his ACL, I think, first game against Italy, or before the first game. I can't remember which one it was. So a bit of a heartbreak. And the World Cup before that, remember, he couldn't make it because of that whole testing protocol thing. When, you know, you need to give them, he had three no-shows basically, where I've chatted to loads of guys who had to do it. And I believe now that it was a clear academic incidents. He's never easy. He was tested before, after, during, whatever, and it was never an issue. So he had a few ups and downs, a few bumps along the way, but in the end, he comes out on a high. He had the intelligence of saying that his body couldn't pull through it anymore, because he's only 33 or 34 or something. It's not like he's 40, but unfortunately, that's what he said very cleverly yesterday. He said, "I told you my body couldn't handle." He just took the decision for me. So it's a sad way of finishing. You don't want to finish in crutches in June. But, you know, that there's much bigger and more important things. As long as he's healthy and he's got his family around him, then we wish him all the best.
And we mentioned that Toulouse will want to win the European Cup for him this year. That's an extra bit of added motivation for them. We've talked about John O'Gibbs. Will his departure from La Rochelle give them a bit of extra motivation against Leinster? Or how do you see that one going?
I don't see Toulouse wanting to win it for him. All I meant is that they will try to make him proud on top of that. They want to take their mate, you know, up to them, and they'll be like, right, let's help him to finish on a high. But after the Champions Cup, there's also the top 14. Eh? And Toulouse have got their eye on another Brennus, which technically could make them double French champion because nobody was given the Brennus last year. And for John O'Gibbs, I think it's very different. I don't think the top 14 will be something they'll want to do together, but I think the La Rochelle squad have said, we want to win it with John O while he's still here. Because the combination of John O'Gibbs and Ronan O'Gara is just mind-blowing in terms of experience and knowledge on that European Cup. So they want to use it as much as they can. And it seems like an unbelievable year for everyone to seize an opportunity. You just need to win two games. You know, you don't need to win 50 times and then you have a star on the jersey for the rest of your life.
And Johnny, how do they go about it against Leinster? Because they are lacking in European pedigree and experience compared to Leinster. But how do they go about doing it?
They are, and I think we talked about it briefly before. If you've watched Leinster's game over the past 3, 4, 5 seasons, they're hugely impressive. They always have been. They churn out an incredible number of academy kids that come through and flourish through their school system. Like the amount of kids they drive through and then the quality that they produce at top level is incredible. But I think if you're going to copycat anybody's blueprint, look no further than Saracens. And how just with power and bullet with Skelton when he was there, how they've bullied them. And that would be the one thing, even though you look at Leinster and you don't think, you know, they're lacking much, it'd be like, look, with Aldrich, with Vito, with Botia, can these guys smash Leinster apart and just, therefore, there's no answer. Because if Leinster get hold of the ball, they get into multi-phase, the speed of the game, they can beat anybody. But can La Rochelle, with the power game they have, they're smart, that they're well organized, well thought out, structured play, can they just bully this Leinster team into submission? We've seen their scrum is huge. Maul's a big weapon for them as well. But with those strike runners, can they just bludgeon that gain line and beat basically Leinster to death in a semi-final and get into a final? And as Benji said, it's two games and it can be done easily. And look no further than Saracens. The way they did it over the past few seasons against Leinster, hugely impressive. And I think John O'Gibbs will have taken note and that game plan will be rolled out this weekend.
So I couldn't agree more with you, Johnny, apart from the quarterfinal against Exeter. For me, it's basically telling you that doing it, thinking that you're just going to outmuscle them is just not enough. And Saracens, like you said, do it the Saracens way. They outmuscled them, but on top of them, they strategically killed them. High balls, pressure under, extreme discipline. And that's going to be the key one. If La Rochelle can apply that extreme discipline, and that's what I hope for them, that Ronan O'Gara and John O'Gibbs are going to bring them. And inner inside analysis of the Leinster, what makes them think, what makes them tick even as players in terms of what can get them out of their comfort zone, personally, emotionally, whatever. All that tiny bit of knowledge is going to be, for me, the added value that they can bring that will basically make the impact more complete rather than just saying, we're going to out-muscle them, that's it. Because the Exeter quarterfinal showed that it's not enough. And you're going to have to bring everything. So they can do it, but it's still it's a proper, proper game that they're going to have to play.
100%. If you look back at that Sale quarterfinal and you saw how smart they were with some of their plays, like it's not just going to be physicality. They're going to be everything, complete performance, like you say. But again, I think the most important thing for them is physically just to dominate that gain line, get themselves in the front foot and don't give Leinster a sniff, because we've seen how easily again they can come back from absolutely nowhere and snatch a game. So yeah, should be a huge game of rugby.
So come on then, let's get your predictions. Are you calling an All-French final? What's going to happen in both games?
So I reckon Toulouse will beat Bordeaux, let's say 20-10, a comfortable win, 10 points difference. They're definitely not going to trash them. Bordeaux are no joke this year. But I see Toulouse winning comfortably, let's say 20-10 or 23-10, whatever. La Rochelle-Leinster is a very, very tough one. For the sake of it, because I would love them to get there, I will give La Rochelle to win 16-15. But my brain is telling me that Leinster are just too big for them. But my heart will go La Rochelle 16-15.
Yeah, I'm going to go the exact same. I think Toulouse, it should be, not comfortable, it's the wrong word to use, but they should have enough to win this game. Bordeaux's prep is going to be atrocious. So Toulouse home win, and then look, just for history and for the rugby that they've played throughout this year, forget how well they're going in the top 14 as well consistently. I think La Rochelle 2 seasons ago would have lost this game in a very straightforward fashion. I think this will be a much tighter game, and although Leinster have the history, have the pedigree, I just think with that power and the minds behind the scenes of John O'Gibbs and Ronan O'Gara, they've got enough to sneak past Leinster. So I think it's going to be a Toulouse-La Rochelle final.
We will see. And I'll see you both at Channel 4 at the weekend.
From a distance.
Thanks, Benji. Thanks, Johnny. And a big thanks to all of you guys for listening as well. Make sure you hit subscribe. Leave us a nice review if you can. And we'll be back with another episode next week. Au revoir, guys.
Cheers.
Crowd Network, a place where you belong.